Song and wise words from the genius of Robbie Burns all those years ago. Oh, there we go. Yep, you know, Robbie wrote those words long ago, and they're still just as wise as they were then. We should all get along, and let's hope that in this coming year that we do better job than we did this year. Hey, everybody, it's a really cold and drippy and rainy Friday out there, the last Friday of the year. The next time you hear our show, it's going to be another year. And so just stay tuned. Just kick back. You don't want to go outside. It's wet. It's cold. It's going to flood. Just stay home with a cup of tea and your cat on your lap and listen to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely and charming co-host, Ani Haynes, is rambling the building, and her lovely and charming partner, Teresa Mitchell, is here with us also, and we're going to deconstruct the year that was. And, you know, I think that you can sort of sum up 2005. The Willamette Week cover actually did a great job. It says, 2005 sucked. Yeah. I think that's a pretty accurate description of the year, don't you, Teresa?
It's to the point, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. But, you know, next year can be better. And let me tell you how one way that you can make next year better before we dive into the tofu of the show here. I have a really important announcement, about Portland Cop Watch orientation and trainings in January. Everybody should know what you will learn in these trainings. There, it's the second, fourth, and fifth Mondays at 6 p.m. at the Community Language and Culture Bank, which is at the corner of Graham and MLK, which is around the corner from Billy Reed's. So it's real accessible. The bus goes right there. It's on January 9th, January 23rd, and January 30th. Those are Monday nights at 6. And the first one is orientation. And then 2 weeks later is your rights and the police. And the third one is cop watching. Now, if you need information about this, you can call Cop Watch 503-236-3065. Or you can look at send an email to trainings@portlandcopwatch.org. And there is a reservation is required, and there is a charge, but a minor charge, very minimal, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. And basically, you're going to learn all kinds of good things. The orientation will give a background on who the Cop Watch is and what they do and all that sort of thing, all the acronyms and your way around the police department. And then there'll be your rights in the police seminar. The second one will feature an attorney. And the third part is a 2.5-hour Cop Watch training, and it will show you how to legally and safely observe the police, including video recording, and how to file complaints. So if you're interested in that, it's all through January on Monday nights, 503-236-3065 to sign up, or trainings@portlandcopwatch.org. And I encourage you all to go. I think that would be a excellent thing to do.
I found some better headphones.
Teresa and I are, neither of us are strangers to dealing with the Portland police. And I assure you, it's always best to have lots of information in your quiver of arrows when you go interact with the police, don't you think?
Well, yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, driving a bus, I see them doing the right thing all the time. And so these bizarre incidents really stick out in my mind. One of our people recently was on the bus when a really bizarre incident occurred, in which I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to steal this thunder, so I'm not going to tell you the whole thing, but generally, when I'm driving the bus and the cops want somebody that's on the bus, they follow behind me, and they, everyone has to get off the bus because there's a terminus point.
Right.
So they just wait until whoever they want gets off the bus. If that person is armed, that's so much the better, because, you know, that way they can deal with this person and his pistol or whatever, and not have to endanger everyone on the bus. Well, exactly the opposite happened recently. And it's those incidents really stick out. And I think the big problem is, you know, the cops are just kind of whack. Don't get disciplined.
Yeah, I know. I really do believe it's the policy at the top that's the problem, not the individual officers. Well, we have another completely unrelated yet equally important, it's sort of an announcement. And we're joined on the phone by Jenny Lee. Hello, Jenny.
Hey, morning.
Hi there. How you doing?
So great. I'm excited to offer a story of hope and
yes,
happiness
indeed.
For the new year.
Well, you know, for those of you who've been following the saga of Tryon Life Farm, there is an article in Willamette Week about them. They're oh so close to making their goal of saving that beautiful piece of land for the ongoing Organic Farm and Education Center. Tell us what's going on, Jenny.
Well, we are 12 days away and $150,000 away from fulfilling this vision.
Oh, that's just nothing. You can do it.
We've already raised $1.4 million as a community to buy this land and protect it and keep it as a sustainability education center. We've been working for a year and a half now, and our deadline is January 10th. And we have just $150,000 still to raise. And we're putting the word out there now that time for the broader community to step up and step forward and help out. You know, if 1,000 people give $150, we've saved the farm. We could do that today with just people hearing this right now.
And wouldn't that be great to be able to say, I saved the farm?
Yeah.
You know? I was one of the people that saved the farm. Maybe you can even make T-shirts and give them out, you know?
Well, we have this big tree, this capital campaign tree, where everybody's name is up on the tree and kind of crayons and permanent marker. And I can't tell you how good it feels to actually write your name on that tree and know that literally you are a piece of saving this piece of land.
So are you... Sorry, go ahead.
It's just beautiful that, you know, this is a partnership between... over 700 people have already given, and the city of Portland is giving $100,000. Metro and the state are involved. We've gotten grants. Hundreds of our neighbors are involved. It's this huge community effort, schools, organizations. It's really a place that's serving a lot of different kinds of people.
I want to actually speak to that for a moment, Jenny.
Hi, yeah.
Good morning. I wanted to just go ahead and maybe get you back up for a moment. And if listeners aren't so familiar with what the farm is, what Tryon Life Community Farm is doing and serving, and why this is such an important thing for the community at large, can you give people an idea of why this is so important?
Yeah, well, the context is that Tryon Life Community Farm is 7 acres of land in southwest Portland. It's on Boone Ferry Road, completely surrounded by Tryon Creek State Park. So it really is this little gem of farmland surrounded by forest on a city bus line. And it's interesting because it's really set up for sustainability education, for being a place where we can really try on and demonstrate how you can integrate your day-to-day residential life with agriculture, with conservation, with community, a lot of different aspects of trying on this new world that we're creating. This is a place that has just evolved into a community place for years. But a year and a half ago, the owners of the land tried to sell the property to a developer, Brownstone Homes, and Brownstone bought the purchase option, and we organized to save the farm and protect the land and actually create it into a nonprofit education center. So as of last March, we were able, as a total volunteer grassroots effort, we were able to raise $125,000 and buy out the developer, get his purchase option, get him off the land, and then use this land. This summer we've had over 2,000 people there doing in our classes and workshops and school programs, stuff like that. And so we've been developing this really interesting new sustainability education center, and we've been raising the money as this grassroots effort to buy the land. We're going to put it into a land trust, protect it with a conservation easement that the city and the state and metro are involved with. And now, you know, on January 10th, it becomes an official community-owned and community resource.
Well, this is Teresa, and I have a question that's been popping up in my mind since I've been following this story. It seems like since you've raised 90% of the full value, why won't commercial? I mean, it seems like a commercial lender would be jumping into this to give you a balloon note on the remaining 10. How can they get on?
We do have our commercial loan and from Shore Bank Pacific, and it's we're actually finalizing that in the next couple of days. But at this point, you know, our loan is probably going to be $700,000 or $800,000, which is actually pretty easily paid off by our monthly income for the renters, because we're renters. We pay market rate rent to live there, so we have the kind of the size loan that we want to hold.
Mm-hmm.
The capital campaign, we've raised almost $200,000 from the community so far, as well as gotten grants and the city of Portland giving $100,000. There's a whole host of different partners.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, and now it's really up to the broader community of Portland to take the moment right now to think about, you know, this is a choice that is going to be permanent and tangible, and it's a community place. It's really a story of hope for so many people.
Well, it's a resource for everyone, sounds
like. Yeah.
Well, you know, this is sort of a desperate act, but have you considered, like, getting a bunch of people to, like, get a credit card? I mean, I know people who've made movies on their credit cards. I suppose you could make up the deficit somehow. I know that there's
Michael
a lot of
Moore
people out there who would still love to support you, though. How can people, you know, help you?
Well, the best way right now is to donate. People can lend us money. We're open to low-interest philanthropic loans, so that could work. But right now, we're just asking people to give and give what they can. It's tax-deductible. We're a 501c3. It's a great gift to somebody else, to give them, you know, a gift to the farm in their name. And really, if 1,000 people, that's not that many people, give $150 each, which a lot of people really can afford for something that's such a valuable resource.
Of course.
And how can people get a hold of you, Jenny?
Our website is www.tryonfarm.org. That's TryonFarm.org. Our office number is 503-245-3847. And our address is 11640 Southwest Boone Ferry Road.
Now, if somebody gave you the donation by tomorrow, I guess, it would be tax deductible, right, for this year?
Yeah, well, any time. It's, you know, whether it's this year or next year, it's still tax deductible. And we want to encourage people to come by and visit any time, you know, any daylight hour between now and January 10th is really the time to stop by and see it for yourself. It really, I mean, when people finally make it up there, they can't believe what is going on. It's so unique and so special.
Well, it seems to me that even just as the value, even just as a undeveloped piece of land and, as opposed to a developed one, even in and of itself, it should be worthwhile to preserve, but especially considering how you are doing all this education and, you know, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this definitely is an important piece of property to protect the integrity of Tryon Creek State Park. We're just 400 feet above Tryon Creek, which is a sediment-sensitive river, and, you know, housing development in the middle of the park would destroy the experience and the ecological value of, you know, that whole section.
I'm just amazed that the planning commissioner, whoever, would have allowed that to go through, but, you know, let's hope that never comes to pass.
Yeah.
And that you make your goal.
Yeah, January 10th is the deadline. Really, if we don't have all the money on that day, then we all need to be off the property on January 12th.
Oh, my.
So this is real, and we're calling on people. It's a beautiful effort. Please take part right now. This is the time, and we are absolutely going to fulfill this vision.
And your website, one more time, is?
Is tryonfarm.org.
All right. Thank you, Jenny, for joining us.
We wish you the best of luck, and you'll keep us updated, right, on
absolutely.
How you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. You guys have a beautiful day.
Hey, and you too.
Good luck, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Sounds good.
Wow, that was...
And that was Jenny.
The clock is ticking.
we've had several reports from Tryon Farm, Tryon Life Community Farm, over the last 6 months. And, we will continue to follow them. And this next, as you heard, 10 days is really, really crucial.
Well, let's hope that they make it. And we'll be sure to report on their fate as soon as we know it.
And...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, so I was just going to sort of look at the year that's been.
That was the year that was? For those of you who are old enough to remember, that was the week that was.
my head spins. I mean, we began this year with a really deep miasma. If you'll recall, back in January, we were like beyond hand-wringing. It was like... Wow.
Well, people were digging out for that horrible tsunami across the planet, for one thing.
Well, there was, oh my God, that. I wanted to talk about the tsunami and Katrina and the earthquake.
Mother Nature's not pleased.
the earthquake in Kashmir. These events that have disrupted and killed, so many this year. But I was looking at the political miasma of, the 4 more years, how did that happen again? Last fall, people felt desperate. People felt pretty sad, disempowered, really. It was pretty clear that Bush stole another election, and yet, they were proclaiming a clear mandate from the people.
Yeah, right.
Just like, a gnat's breath more hypothetically voted for Bush.
Hypothetically.
It's a big hypothetical.
Thanks,
and it was
Diebold.
A little gnat's breath. we were having to undergo all of that hype and propaganda, and it was hard. I mean, it was just psychically hard. And a year later... there's talk of Bush's censure and impeachment because of the crimes he's committed.
Well, he's the first president in history to admit, to openly say without provocation on international television that he'd committed a high crime and a misdemeanor and a felony.
Holy bejeebies, yeah.
I mean, he just came right out and said, oh, yeah, I did it. I mean, what a fool. The man does not deserve to be in office.
Well, and let's talk about what you're talking about there, Melody. I mean, when you say he's admitted to, committing this crime, he's admitting to authorizing the NSA to spy on U.S. citizens.
With no provocation.
He's admitted to authorizing, I just want to say it again, the NSA to spy on U.S. citizens.
And I wouldn't be at all surprised if, you know, among our listeners, perhaps even among the people in this room, that some of us are being spied on for no reason except for the fact that we dare to still think for ourselves. And, you know, we already know that they were spying on the peace group in Colorado, which we talked about a few weeks ago. And no doubt, well, we know that in the past they've spied on the, you know, peace and justice works here and, you know, similar completely harmless groups all around the country. It just boggles the mind.
I want to be clear that there's been like sort of the Red Squad sort of level, which is spying for sure. Then there's the president authorizing the National Security Administration, or I'm sorry, agency, National Security Agency, to go ahead and commit the eavesdropping, as it were.
Eavesdropping.
I want to read from this article from the Washington Post, December 16th. President Bush signed a secret order in 2002 authorizing the National Security Agency to eavesdrop on U.S. citizens and foreign nationals in the U.S., despite previous legal prohibitions against such domestic spying. That's according to sources with knowledge of the program. The super secretive NSA, which has generally been barred from domestic spying except in narrow circumstances involving foreign nationals, has monitored the email, telephone calls, and other communications of hundreds and perhaps thousands of people under the program, according to the New York Times. The aim of the program was to rapidly monitor the phone calls and other communications of the of people in the U.S. believed to have contact with suspected associates of Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups overseas. According to two former senior administration officials, authorities, including a former NSA director, were worried that vital information could be lost in the time it took to secure a warrant from a special surveillance court.
Well, you know, one of the most egregious cases of this that we're aware of, I do believe, is the case of Mr. James Yee, who is an Army chaplain and a Muslim, and he was stationed down at Guantanamo and was very egregiously treated, along with several other people who were stationed there. He was removed from Guantanamo, imprisoned, in very poor conditions. Now, he's written a book, and he's traveling around talking about it. Interrogated, mistreated, all because he was attempting to do his job as the chaplain to the Muslims who were incarcerated there. And he is, you know, of course, an American citizen, and he has a long history. His whole family for generations has been in the military, and he's just outraged. And they accuse him of espionage and all this sort of thing. It's just ridiculous stuff.
And when you get down to it, the real basis for all of that aggression against him was he was sympathetic to Muslims. Mm-hmm. Just like Brandon mm-hmm. Mayfield. I mean, when you get a little perspective on it, no one actually ever did believe that fingerprint in Spain had anything to do with Brandon Mayfield.
Exactly.
It was just an excuse to harass the hell out of him for being sympathetic to Muslims.
Well, and they wanted to go on a fishing expedition through his papers, which is what they were able to accomplish by
that. Yeah, and they locked him up and, you know, and tried to ruin his life. And all of this aggression, I keep thinking this is all based on losing 3,000 people or less in 2001. While we've lost 10 times that many people you got to put it in perspective. We've lost 10 times that many people due to cigarettes and automobiles since that time. It's like, quick, officer, shoot, there's an automobile.
I know.
There's a cigarette, open fire. I mean, it's the fear. This is bogus.
Even worse, alcohol. You know?
Well, also, I just want to get back to that Washington Post article I was quoting from earlier. It ends with some words from folks in the civil liberties protection scenario. For example, Kate Martin, she's the director of the Center for National Security Studies, said that the secret order may amount to the president authorizing criminal activity. She says, it's a shocking revelation as we've ever seen from the president, from Bush's administration. She says, it is, I believe, the first time the president has authorized government agencies to violate specific criminal prohibition and eavesdrop on Americans. Carolyn Fredrickson, the director of the Washington Legislative Office of the ACLU, says she's dismayed by the report. She says it's clear that the administration has been very willing to sacrifice civil liberties in an effort to exercise its authority on terrorism to the extent that it authorizes criminal activity. The NSA activities were justified by classified Justice Department legal opinion that was authored by Mr. John C. Yu. for deputy of the Office of Legal Counsel, he also argued that congressional approval of the war on Al-Qaeda gave broad authority to the president, you know, to do such things as spy on U.S. citizens.
How handy.
That legal argument was similar to another 2002 memo authored primarily by you. With help from others in the Justice Department, which outlined an extremely narrow definition of torture. That opinion, which was signed by another Justice Department official, was formally disavowed after it was disclosed by the Washington Post.
Well, and, you know, that's the argument. Oh, well, Clinton and Carter, you know, authorized these. No, they authorized the FISA, who are the people who are supposed to oversee these warrants, who hardly ever turn down to do things. But they never, ever, ever spied on Americans without a warrant, to our knowledge. And this is, it's so unnecessary.
Well, the NSA didn't. I mean, it's
to
not
our
like
knowledge.
People have never been spied on before, because
yes.
COINTELPRO has existed.
But not under these circumstances.
Not the NSA.
No.
The FBI, sure. And as I said earlier,
we know that
local
for a fact.
Red squads, the FBI, mm-hmm. sure. It's not like I'm saying that's okay.
Oh,
but this is a whole different level.
But nobody
ever had the president come up and say, screw the Constitution.
Exactly.
That's basically it.
One's ever admitted on TV that they violated the law in such a way before either.
You got it. So, couple of things. Want to point out, it's 8:01 in the morning. You are listening to KBOO-FM Portland, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Melody.
I'm Teresa.
And I think we should have like a chime now, you know, after those three.
Ding!
And together we are all being rather positively revolting. We hope you are too. And we would like for you to call us with your reflections on this year. I have like a 4-page list of things that I really want to make sure we mention. Because this year has gone by at like the speed of light. And I know this is not anything like a comprehensive list. So
no, I'm sure it isn't, because there's so many things we could say.
Because it's only 4 pages. So let's hear from you, and you can fill in some of our blanks. 503-231-8187.
I do believe Willamette Week summed it up perfectly, though. 2005 sucked. I mean, it's been a difficult year, and I don't necessarily think that 2006 will be easier, although I think there may be some wonderful things that happen, as there are in every year. I think we're in for some slogging here, but we need to keep our hearts and our minds and our spirits together. And so it behooves us to review the year and see how we can keep going forward in the face of adversity, I think, you know, because there's a lot of positive things that can and probably will happen in 2006, though.
Slog on.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so other things that I actually got kind of happy about towards the end of the year. Happy in that way of, thank God other people are noticing this. Bush's cronyism.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
pretty
and we saw that
obvious.
In so many really kind of horrendous situations. Again,
most noticeably with Miss Condoleezza Rice is one of the most outstanding examples of, shall we say, the Peter Principle.
Oil tanker Rice.
I was actually thinking of FEMA. I was also thinking of Harriet Myers.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
You know, finally it comes to light. Other people are noticing that if you're a major contributor to the campaign or a friend of the family, you're in some place in this administration.
Yeah, it's been a good year.
There's
for that,
room
hasn't
for
it?
You.
Things are getting exposed.
Things
Abramoff
are getting exposed.
Delay.
Oh, uh-huh. Delay.
Delay's indictment, the next thing on my
that
list.
That was great.
Delay's indictment and the fact that he's still, you know, is under indictment.
He's being investigated further for further indictments.
Rove, Libby.
Uh-huh.
Judith Miller.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the whole
Patrick Fitzgerald.
The whole Plamegate thing. Rove still not cleared.
Who would have thunk that he would, he would uncover and pursue such things?
The state of Ohio throwing the election.
Well, not such a surprise. And that's something we really have to be vigilant about and have to be vocal about in 2006.
But just
free and fair elections.
John Conyers has been really leading the charge there, and I think that's good, that he's not going away and being quiet about it, which is refreshing.
But we all need to make sure that free and fair elections is part of our regular vocabulary. We can't just leave it to Conyers.
The head of Diebold resigned. That's a good sign.
Like I told Peter Phillips, I think this nation is suffering from an anemic shortage of torch-bearing mobs.
So
for the rabble to storm the castle.
So there's an entrepreneurial opportunity if you want to organize torch-bearing mobs. Maybe you should do that.
Okay, tongue
in You can chin. Never have too many torches.
I think you probably could, actually. Conflagration.
Be careful. Fire safety is very important when you have a torch-bearing mob.
Okay, so, you know, there's also all of the surveillance stuff around the Patriot Act. Of course, the Patriot Act needing, in quotation marks, to be reauthorized.
Ooh, and the way that they somehow, like, managed to... That was good. That was good tactics on the part of the Dems, I think, the way that they've stood up finally to that.
Finally. And it's not over. You know, it's just sort of, it's been extended for a month while it's being discussed.
And they
further.
Defeated Anwar for the moment. That was also good.
Yeah. But again, in the Patriot Act, you know, our work here is not done. It's not defeated. It hasn't gone away. It's extended for a month while it's being discussed.
Well, let's make a list of some freedoms that we have lost or that powers that the president has gained. Let's see. They can sneak into your house when you're not there and spy on you because who cares about the Fourth Amendment? They can call you an enemy combatant and take you away and hold you without charge indefinitely, I guess, which means for the rest of your life or until they get rid of your bones.
Basically, you can be disappeared, like in Argentina.
You can be rendered to some nation to be tortured, again, indefinitely, but we're not fascists or anything.
We're not fascists.
And I just want to maybe spend a moment talking about extraordinary rendition. One of the things I would love to see in 2006 is an end of euphemisms.
Yes, like collateral damage.
Extraordinary rendition, by many other words, would be kidnapping. Kidnapping, abduction. Abduction would work for me.
Now that phrase used to apply to Pagliacci, you know.
Now, see, the extraordinary rendition, before I heard that applied to politics, I would have thought that it meant that somebody did a good job of painting something.
I was going to say, they rendered it. It was a great work of art.
Yeah,
and
look
really
at what a great job they
rendered.
Did of rendering Bob on the canvas. But no, that's not what it means at all. That's what they want you to think. You know, I'm just amazed that we haven't received any callers yet. All of our callers must be asleep or... perhaps they've been washed away already and they're floating in their front yards. I don't know.
503. That's really a horrible thought, Melanie.
Horrible. Well, it is pretty wet out there.
503-231-8187.
You know, bobbing around in their swimming pools.
Yeah, and then when you try to escape on the freeway, the suburbs will hold you back with shotguns.
So there's all...
Oh, dear.
So
there's a happy thought.
Well, and, you know, this happened, of course, in New Orleans, and that's another thing I really want to talk about.
Yes, it did.
Is the incident at Gretna on the bridge in New Orleans. That was a really defining moment for this country.
Why, what incident? Nothing like that ever happened, don't you know?
Oh, yeah, that's what I heard.
That's what the Gretna people said.
Yeah. Too bad it did, actually. And
how about
that? In fact, 60 Minutes actually did... a decent show earlier this
month. They occasionally do decent shows.
I didn't actually see it. I saw some transcript from it.
They're occasionally shadows of their former selves, you know, when they used to actually do real hard-hitting journalism once long ago.
But before we really look at the natural disasters of the year and how, in fact, this administration has made them worse, I wanted to give a couple more updates of stories that we follow and some very significant happenings over the last in the last month. I mean, really, you know, it's like there's so much happening so quickly all the time that it's hardly like a year in review. I could just, you know, we could do two shows on December in review.
Yeah, a lot's been happening.
First of all, Lynn Stewart. Remember Lynn Stewart? We were fortunate enough to have Lynn on as our distinguished guest about 2 months ago now. Lynn Stewart is a lawyer who is on trial herself. Her sentencing trial was going to be earlier this month. I think it was scheduled for December 13th. And that's what we were announcing on our show. That sentencing trial has been moved to March 10th, which means there's more time for people to get involved in her defense committee. There's more time to write polite letters to judges to talk about how her sentencing, should go. How to get involved? Well, you can get in touch with the Lynn Stewart Defense Committee. You can write to them at 350 Broadway, Suite 700, New York, New York, 100132.
That makes more sense.
The next part would be their phone number. I just didn't leave a space between them at my little printer.
It starts with 212.
212-625-9696. You could also email info@LynnStewart, LynnStewart.org.
And ironically enough, Patrick Fitzgerald is involved in her case as well. He gets around.
Yeah, in fact. Not in a good way.
In her case.
Also, Mamiya gets some good news
for a change.
And I'm just going to go ahead and read from a press release here. December 6th this year, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit issued a most important decision affecting my client, Mumia Abu-Jamal, since the lower federal court ruling in December of 2001. An order was issued this morning that the court will accept for review the following issues, all of which are of enormous constitutional significance and go to the very essence of Mumia's right to fair trial, due process of law, and equal protection of the law under the 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution.
Well, about time.
So, you know, it opens actually a door to have another trial, and that is moving forward. Opening briefs are due to be filed by January 17th. The case is now on a fast track. The court has also issued a briefing schedule, so that's January 17th. Briefs are due to be filed in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal and his appeals from death row. So that's an extremely important happening.
Yes, it is.
And those, you know, so Lynn Stewart, Mumia Abu-Jamal, remember to pay attention to those that are in the clutches of the criminal injustice system.
Well, not only that, I mean, there's another angle to this you don't hear a lot about, and that is they really do need to know who killed Officer Faulkner, because it wasn't Mumia, or at least not in the way described, and it was obviously a setup, and whoever killed him will probably kill again and might have killed since.
That's very true. And, you know, as depressing as all this might sound, I really do believe that on the whole that we are gaining ground here, that we are, in, to use a bad metaphor, winning this war against ourselves and our country's founding principles and, you know, all that is good and right. I do believe that we are making progress despite the fact that these are dark days.
We are making some progress.
Well, that's better than making no progress.
But at the same time, we are losing some ground.
Of course we are. You know.
So I'm having a hard time defining that as progress.
Well,
so let's go ahead and talk to our caller. Good morning.
Keep forging ahead.
You are on the air.
Hello?
Oh. Let's try you. Good morning. You are on the air.
Hello? Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Why all the drama around this thing about wiretapping? You know that the president, Congress gave the president authority to do so. I mean,
yes, with warrants.
He is not breaking the law.
How do you know? Have you ever heard of the Bill of Rights?
There's a thing called a warrant that you're supposed to get before you do these things. There is the FISA court is set up specifically for that purpose for overseas, you know, activity. And they seldom reject a request, so it's really not that onerous to get a warrant. He was not authorized to do it without warrants.
Are you aware that Thomas Jefferson sent the U.S. Navy to North Africa to shell?
Pray tell, what does it have to do with George Bush and warrants?
It's a precedent. It's a precedent.
No, it wasn't. Those were pirates, and they were actively attacking U.S. ships.
I'm having a hard time with that.
They were Muslim pirates. And they were attacking and
just
enslaving.
As many of them. They were not principally Muslim. You are incorrect. They were principally animists.
What does it have to do with the NSA and George Bush
using
this?
Conditions of war, president has the authority
to do such action. We're at war. Oh, no.
Wait a minute.
I am not scared. Why are you so scared?
Wait. Don't talk over each other.
This has nothing to do with it. I mean, this is a totally different situation.
Gave him authority to do whatever he
That was over 200 years ago.
Are the big bad Muslims going to get you so you want to give up your liberties?
That has nothing to do with it.
It's gutless is what it is.
The Patriot Act authorized the president to do certain things. It did not authorize him to direct the NSA to spy on American citizens without proper authorization. It simply didn't.
If you want to have civil liberties, you got to have some guts.
And the reason that there's so much drama about this is because when you have a president admitting to criminal activity, there needs to be a little hoopla. Because the president really is not above the law in a democratic and free society. That's sort of the bottom line.
Okay, but then the debate is whether what he's doing is legal or not. So why all the drama?
It's not much of a debate.
I mean, some people believe that what he's doing is legal and others don't.
It's not. There's absolutely no reason why, if you suspect that some citizen or other is doing something that's illegal or dangerous or they're conspiring with Al-Qaeda, that you can't go to a judge, which, I mean, you can phone up a judge and get a warrant over the phone. Usually it takes 10 minutes. And there's just no excuse for it. And there's no reason why the NSA should have been directed to do this by him. None
whatsoever.
There is
one excuse, that there are partisan left-wing judges who wouldn't give...
Well, then obviously you'd call a different judge.
Bush administration...
A left-wing judge?
Any sort of warrant.
Do you realize that FISA's only rejected 4 requests out of all the ones that they've been...
Because you actually have to go to, you know, the special court, right? FISA. And those are not stacked with liberal, left-leaning judges, sir.
They've only rejected 4 requests over the entire time they've existed, so I don't think that they're very likely
to
reject the request. But that's not true.
Okay, so this I just want to go ahead. I just want to go ahead and quote from USA Today. You know, that left-leaning paper, USA Today. This is from...
They are major left.
Please.
So this is from, I don't know, it's last week.
USA Today?
Let's see. Since October 2001, the super-secret National Security Agency has monitored, without court-approved warrants, the international phone calls and emails of people inside the U.S. And Bush's willingness to publicly acknowledge some of the government's most classified activities was a stunning development for a president known to dislike disclosure of even the most mundane inner workings of the White House. Already, the Bush administration is under fire for allegedly operating secret prisons in Eastern Europe and shipping suspected terrorists to other countries for harsh interrogations. Now, one of the things that I have read specifically and that was getting spied upon was a gay and lesbian student group in a University of California who were engaged on campus with leafleting and educational activities to counter recruitment efforts because of discriminatory policies of the military towards gays and lesbians. Oh, he's gone. This was leading up to a big question for him. He left.
Well,
our engineer says that fella hung up, and I'm sorry about that, because my big question was, I want to know how spying on a gay and lesbian student group doing some education around the discrimination of gays and lesbians in the military warrants being spied on, because... Right? Ready for the excuses. The gay and lesbian student group was planning a gay and lesbian kiss-in on campus.
Well, clearly Al-Qaeda was financing that.
To demonstrate against the discrimination of gays and lesbians. Now, they were being spied on, and the rationale was the kiss-in was considered a credible terrorist threat. I'm not making this up. Now, so
this sounds like Tom Tomorrow's cartoons, except it's for real.
I'm just, you know, help me. Anyone that says spying on U.S. citizens from the very top echelons of our government, given the official okie-dokie, with no rhyme or reason, nor warrants, no oversight, anyone that thinks that that's a good and patriotic act, is wrong.
I'm extremely disturbed.
Wrong.
I mean, we've been laughing. I mean, I couldn't help but laugh. At some of the callers' assertions. But
I can help but laugh.
This is extremely disturbing to me that there are, and I know the caller speaks for more. There's plenty of people out there who agree with him. Extremely disturbing to me that we have reached a point in this nation where people like our caller actually believe that this is a justifiable way for our government to behave, to, you know, to spy, to, first of all, to waste our tax dollars, if not even to mention the constitutional issues, the waste of money and resources on such a clearly off base, and completely, it's not, it completely is far and away from the intent of the law, the intent of the NSA, the intent of the Patriot Act, whatever you may think of the Patriot Act. I don't agree with many of its provisions, but this, how could you possibly claim that this is an appropriate thing for the government to do? I just, it disturbs me greatly that so many Americans agree with this. They think it's fine that we haul people off in a you know, some black helicopter or something to some unnamed European country where we torture them. What? This is appalling.
Well, you know, and it brings up again that hysterical tone. You notice that hysterical tone. They're going to get us. They are going to get us.
Who?
And it's like, yeah, and it's very, it's really getting into extreme cowardice. It's like people are scared of their own shadows these days. And we all just need to take a deep breath and say, wait,
there is
not such a threat, obviously.
Well, I know it's been, I've read a number of articles that were quite scholarly and well-researched, and from what I could see, that claim that the idea that Al-Qaeda is an organization is incorrect, that Al-Qaeda isn't even really, that they're just a group of people that are sort of loosely connected, and they are not, they're not an organization per se, and so they're not, you can't predict what, quote-unquote, they are going to do, because, well, they are very loosely associated, and there's no they there.
I think you have to look at who they are when people say they.
Yes.
And let's go ahead and take another caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi. Yes.
You're speaking to me. Thank you. Well, let me suggest... everybody take a deep breath, perhaps including yourselves, and see if we can't get into a mood of respect for others' opinions, and perhaps question for a minute how it is that millions of people could agree with some of the intelligence measures that Bush is taking, that these might be reasonable people, and that they may be reasonable and right-thinking people and live good lives just like perhaps you folks do, and have an attitude of respect. You know, you sort of said something, we're laughing at him. Well, you know, I come from a background, I'm 63 years old. I was in Mississippi in civil rights. I went through anti-war movement. There was never a year in my life that I was not in organizations that were under surveillance. We live with it. It's part of life. It's part of life. Now, I'm not saying that to justify it. I'm saying when he says cut the drama, I think he has a good suggestion. We have to just take this in stride and move forward.
I have to say I agree with you on several points, and the last one I disagree with you on. I don't think that you can take it in stride when you have an administration coming out boldfacedly and saying we don't need no stinking warrants.
Yeah, I am not going to take fascism in stride ever. Never.
Okay, I'm not.
You understand?
I'm not going to disagree with that.
Pretty much in agreement with Teresa here.
No, I'm not going to disagree with any of that. But if we want to fight fascism, we do it by creating a climate of respect that will allow the left to have respect within the organizations that can move a movement that can create a left and progressive consensus. We won't do that by disrespecting decent people who have different views. And I think that the tone of some of the discussion on KBOO and your program this morning, in particular, in talking to this fellow, is part of that. We need to recognize, and this is not to accept any particular kind of intelligence action, but political organizations of all stripes, right and left, attract all kinds of people, and they also become the recruiting grounds for all kinds of organizations, and they become reasonable ground for intelligence. And so if you have a successful peace organization you should take pride that you might be under surveillance.
You know, I have to say I'm not going to go ahead and wear a badge of honor because people are being harassed by COINTELPRO. And this is getting, I have to say, extremely serious. This is a life and death sort of struggle at this point. You know, 2 weeks ago, maybe three, this month has blown by me at the speed of light. You know, six activists nationwide were snatched for acts of, quote, eco-terrorism, end quote. They were snatched nationwide, and they were environmental activists over the last several years.
Did they commit acts that might be...
Well, actually, I have no idea. They haven't stood trial yet.
Brandon,
I don't know.
They're
activists. They are environmental activists.
That
this
doesn't
much
make them pure and righteous.
Honey, I'm not saying they're pure and righteous.
And I'm not honey.
I'm not
honey to you.
And,
I'm
oh,
only honey to my baby here at my house.
Okay,
sir.
I just want to finish my sentence.
What happened to being respectful for other people's
opinions? I am not
talking
about them being pure and righteous. I'm talking about there being a nationally coordinated effort to take six activists off the street in a rather disturbing and frightening fashion, coordinated nationwide at the end of several years worth of observation, surveillance, and that sort of thing. And one of them since then ended up dead in custody. Okay.
Supposedly by
now
his own hand.
Well, I rest my case.
This
if you
is
folks think
a
that, that is by
scenario.
Itself evidence, you're missing something.
Well, this is such a frightening. No, what I'm saying
I've
is this is a frightening scenario.
Time.
Well, such a thing as inductive logic. I mean, Brandon Mayfield is a righteous and pure man, cutie poo.
Yes, he is.
So anyway, you know, I'm sorry if you are not thinking that this is a serious threat to our civil liberties and freedom and the American way. But I'm really feeling that, and I'm going
step,
to speak up about it.
Every step that goes closer to what you're talking about is indeed a threat. But we do not fight that threat by becoming arrogant and self-righteous. We do that by building democracy and a broad left community.
I think we do have to speak out very, very forcefully
against
it. I agree.
Arrogance
though.
Is bad. Thank you very much for your call this morning.
You know,
okay.
It's one
zealotry
thing.
Zealotry of all kinds is the root of our political evils.
Okay.
I have
Thanks
to
for
say
your call
that
this
I
morning.
Think that we need to work on all fronts. Of course, we need to build, you know, peace and justice movements. We need to take care of our communities. We need to, repair the damages that's been done by things like Katrina. We need to serve our people. But we also need to speak out most forcefully against these kinds of things when they happen, because as we know, the Bush administration in particular takes no prisoners in the sense that they will
actually
they, stop
they take
at,
many.
Well, they stop in the sense that they stop at nothing.
Ironic.
And therefore, they're counting on people. They're hoping that people will respond, as the last caller has suggested, that we, just gently say, oh, well, we don't feel good about that. And I think that we have to really do all of these things at the same time. We have to speak out very forcefully. We have to fight as hard as we can in the courts and in the media to be heard. And I think that we have to do the work on the ground, too. There's no shortage of what needs to be done.
Right on. And last I heard, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, sir.
I want to actually quote from an article from Common Dreams before we take our next caller. British U.S. spying draws us closer to Orwell's Big Brother. This is an article that was originally published in the San Jose Mercury News. It's by T.J. Rogers. He's a CEO of Cypress Semiconductor in San Jose.
Hardly a radical lefty, I would say.
No. My waking thought on Christmas Day was that Orwell's vision of Big Brother was no longer a hypothetical possibility, but an actual near-term threat. That realization was synthesized from two news events, one here and one in Britain. In Britain, the government recently decided to deploy global positioning system technology to track every vehicle in the UK every minute of the day. Just as GPS sensors are mandated for use in every cell phone in the near future in the U.S., for our own safety, of course, Britain will mandate the use of a GPS sensor in every car. Has Reginald White arrived at the grocery store yet? Will become a question answerable by the security division of Britain's DMV. The British government promises safeguards to prevent spying on ordinary citizens. But who will follow up on those promises? In the U.S., President Bush is acting under apparently self-granted powers to authorize the National Security Agency to spy Americans. Of course, only on Americans threatening terrorist acts. In an act of high integrity, one of the judges of the secret court that grants Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act search warrants, that's the FISA court that Melody and I referred to earlier, she resigned, citing the fact that Bush was now bypassing even that most minimal civil rights guarantee by directly authorizing NSA spying on U.S. citizens. One can only imagine that this troublesome judge will be replaced by one more friendly to the administration. With only the need to combine two real-world technologies for spying and tracking, the vision of 1984, once just a macabre philosophical concept, becomes an engineering project. The president and those whom he delegates his authority can now authorize government spooks to listen to us in our homes and on our cell phones. When we're not at home, they can track us in our automobiles. The system could be airtight and could be used to control our actions. It's simple enough for most Silicon Valley companies to create a chip to detect a valid GPS signal and disable an automobile's ignition system to prevent citizens from the unauthorized use of their vehicles.
It's also simple enough to remove those chips from your vehicle.
The final move into the totality of 1984 requires only a bit of a philosophical drift, as exemplified by J. Edgar Hoover's directive to spy on the Reverend Martin Luther King because he was a subversive. If Bush's latest acts are left unchallenged, the government will become bolder at spying on whomever it wants and secretly jailing those it deems a threat to national security, all with no troublesome warrants or messy public trials. In this environment, acts other than terrorism will certainly be put on the subversive list, all in the name of protecting our freedom. Why should law-abiding citizens fear these trends? Because the government cannot be trusted. I don't trust President Bush to honor my rights, nor did I trust President Clinton, who was caught with secret FBI files on his political enemies. It's not that I'm unpatriotic, writes T.J. Rogers. Again, I'm quoting an article from the San Jose Mercury News posted to Common Dreams, British U.S. Spying Draws Us Closer to Orwell's Big Brother. And I go back to the article. It's not that I'm unpatriotic, he writes. The founders of our country do not trust any government, either that of George III or an uncontrolled democracy. That's why we have the Bill of Rights to protect American citizens from their own government by demanding, for example, that Congress shall make no law abridging the right of free speech. Our property is also not to be put in jail without knowing the charges against us or having the right to confront our accusers in public trial. Secret courts are inconsistent with the Bill of Rights, the defining document of American freedom. What's the worst thing Al-Qaeda can do to America? We've probably already seen it. Of course, the government can talk about bigger things, like the use of weapons of mass destruction to justify the use of totalitarian tactics. I would rather live as a free man under the highly improbable threat of another significant Al-Qaeda attack than I would as a serf spied on by an oppressive government that can jail me secretly without charges.
Hear, hear.
If the Patriot Act defines the term patriot, then I am certainly not one. By far, our own government is a bigger threat to our freedom than any possible menace posed by Al-Qaeda. Again, that was an article written in the San Jose Mercury News by T.J. Rogers, and I just thought, I wasn't going to read the whole dang thing, but I just thought it just really summed up for me my response to our earlier callers.
It is,
and if you want to know why I'm so really hopped up about it, I think that really underscores it. We need to look at surveillance technology. We need to look at how it's improved. We need to know, and we need to know that if you have a cell phone, the government, within months, really.
Well, cell phones can be picked up by, you can hear them on scanners. That they're,
well, yeah, but they
don't need to be the NSA to overhear
them.
No,
but there's the mandate to put GPS chips in cell phones over the next few months. Now, of course, if you have an old model cell phone, that's not going to have the new required chip because they're not going to make you send it in and get it.
That's why I keep mine.
But, again, if you are an activist and you have a cell phone, you might as well just have a large red sign above your head saying your name, you know, where you're at, what you've been involved with, because it's there, okay? People need to really be security conscious, not paranoid. You know, don't be frightened. Don't be frightened into being irrational, but please
be aware.
Be aware. Educate. Educate yourselves. Educate each other. What are surveillance technologies? Read.
Well, you know, I do believe that, you know, that students of seismology could be like studying Orwell's grave, because his spinning in it at such a high rate of speed is probably creating minor earthquakes all around the vicinity. I'm sure that he would be appalled to see what has become of his prediction.
It was
a
warning, not a blueprint.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I really feel that we're lurching towards a prison state at this point.
I think we're getting real close. I mean, you know, I wanted to get back to something you mentioned in the article where you mentioned about I'd rather than being a serf. I remember reading or hearing on the radio the other day that if you look at the economic structure of this country and how the wealth has shifted to the wealthy and how it's been taken from the poor, that we are now economically in the same position that serfs were in during the feudal times, that there is such a discrepancy between the working person and the wealthy that we are serfs already.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and
take a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, just I do want to toss out a few things. First of all, I have said this for a long time. Ronnie's first term is when it really hit me.
Oh, yeah.
I said we would be trading places with the Soviet Union, and we pretty much are.
And
those who waved the flag the highest have sold us down the river the fastest. And we must keep in mind always that peace is not profitable, and wars make money.
Mm-hmm.
And think about Halliburton and the Carlyle Group.
Yes.
Yeah, and another thing that just crossed me, I'm straight, which that's okay. But, you know, I'm not saying that. I'm only saying that because
some of my friends are straight.
I know some of the nicest people you know.
It's true. I'm straight.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's okay. But the reason I'm saying this is, then with our military, you know, they just don't want to have those gay people in the military.
Uh-huh.
But they seem to love having those federal guys that are porking everything that they can and leaving the babies behind.
I think they're afraid the gay people will show them up.
I guess that's what it is. So, anyway, it just, you know, I think, what the hell. And then now, for something really serious is, I would like to see truth in the mainstream of the orchestration of 9-1-1.
Yes.
Because it was orchestrated to implement or execute or whatever you want to say, the Patriot Act. That has been around for a long time. And how can we ram this down the throats of the American people? They're pretty fat, lazy. They're not quite stupid enough yet. So how do, you know, if they would have waited 4 more years, it would have been less of a problem. But,
right,
you know, we still have little fight left in us.
Yeah, well, and to hear 9/11 referred to, you know, now 4 years later,
help me, Rhonda.
Help me, Rhonda, indeed. You know, whenever Bush's...
Rhonda could help you now.
Whenever Bush's poll numbers slip a little further, 9/11 gets mentioned in a speech within days, you know, and it's just so hackneyed.
Actually, Bush should just get up and say 9/11, 9/11, 9/11.
Well, I think he kind of does.
How do these guys know we're in a war? They've never been in one. They don't know
exactly
what a war is.
Yes. Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing. It's really clear over and around.
Yes, they do know what they're doing.
Well,
the big agenda was to bankrupt the Treasury and dig out that oil in the Middle East.
The oily boys
knew exactly what they were doing.
Well, and also just I think they have a much bigger plan. I don't know if you're familiar with the Project for the New American Century. If you're not, then you should definitely look it up on the internet. Project for a New American Century. It's very disturbing.
I'm not fully cognizant of that.
It's basically what it is it's a plan for not only domination of the globe, but domination of our solar system.
Of the skies, of the universe.
Yes, and it's really, I mean, it sounds like a bad plot from the old Star Trek, except it's real. It's scary, but I do believe that this whole thing with Iraq is a stepping stone to what these people hope to do with the Middle East and, you know, dominating the globe. It's like a game of Risk gone wrong. It's appalling to me, really.
Okay, well, here's just a couple of little thoughts around all of that. And, you know, I've always wondered, people always yapping about that rapture. And when I, oh, God, I hate to tell you this, but once upon a time I went to church and we'd read the Beatitudes and it would say, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth, and I'd think to myself, what the hell do they mean by that? Well, one day it all came to me. The rapture will be when the rich, powerful people hop on their little spacecraft that we, of course, have provided them to fly off to their little space pod in the sky, which we have also provided for them with our hard work and our resources. And you know what? We, the meek, will be left down here on the burned-out orb.
I think that meek may have been a poor translation. I always took it to mean that those who aren't arrogant and don't try to clash in military power struggles are the ones who truly are worthy. But, you know, I think it's gotten lost in all the
dreck. I like that.
The dreck.
I like that interpretation,
anyway,
though.
I'll let someone else have a chance. Thanks so much for
thank you for
have
calling.
A little venting moment. Thanks so much.
I like that interpretation. My interpretation of trickle-down has always been some industrialist on the 90th floor having a great big party, you know, some member of the Gulfstream class, and he steps out onto the balcony, you know, holding a champagne glass in one hand, a cigar in his mouth, and unzips himself with the other, and you down there on the street, you know, begging for dimes, you know, that's going to trickle down on you. That's what trickle-down economic theory is about.
I think that's pretty much the truth. Well, we've got about 20 minutes left here. And then don't go away, though, because on the Radio Zine, you'll hear a special two-part interview with Jonathan Kozel, who's an educator and activist and author of numerous books, including The Shame of the Nation, The Restoration of Apartheid Schooling in America. He's great. You need to hear Jonathan Kozel. At 10, it's a special lecture recorded in Portland this spring featuring Michael Kimmel, who's a sociologist and author. He's received international recognition for his work on men and masculinity from a pro-feminist perspective. And at 11, we'll hear Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Our number, 503-231-8187. And we just have a little time left, so if you've got something to say, call now. And our next caller is on the air. Hello?
Hello, would that be me?
That's you.
Oh, all right. Well, I had to call in today. I liked what you were talking about so much. I was so glad to hear the comments on all sides of the issues. But I'm part of a group of older women who get together, and we write chants. And I'm a terrible singer, so I won't try to sing it, but this one seems so appropriate, what you're talking about today.
Oh, please do share.
Shall I go? Okay, here we go. I'll try. Oh, and this will help if I tell you that it's to the tune of Wake Up, Little Susie.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, here we go. Wake up. We've been snoozing. Wake up. Democracy we're losing. Wake up. The hopeful are gathering. The system is shattering. Because of the lies, so many have died. And the compost now is happening. Wake up. And then it continues on. We hope for more verses in the future.
Oh, that's great.
Well, you know, I think, and this is not to sound sexist, well, maybe it is, I don't know.
go with it.
It certainly seems like the patriarchy has gotten us into this place, and I hear a lot of calls for the grandmothers to come out and start speaking, and I know there are some groups out there whom I haven't heard, but I've heard of, like the 13 indigenous grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we who run female energy, no matter what our bodies may
yes.
look like, do need to just keep on keeping on and protesting everything and having our voices heard.
I agree.
So that's my little bit. Thanks for letting me say it.
Well, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, I want to react to the very common accusation of being a snob against people on the right and not treating them as real people. My attitude towards the right wing is that they've been propagandized and brainwashed, and they find that offensive, but I'm sorry that's the way it is. And if I can draw an analogy, it would be, suppose you're in a crowded theater and someone yells fire. This is going to come out like the way you think. And then 100 people yell fire, and the exits are blocked, and you and the person who lit the cigarette are saying, no, wait, there's not a fire. It's just a cigarette over here, but you're drowned out. Mm-hmm. Well, the other people have been propagandized by hysteria, and so they're going to crush themselves to bloody bits trying to get out the doors.
And perhaps you as well.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter, you know, how loud you say it because you've been shouted down. Well, that's the state of mind control and propaganda in the U.S. today, and Fox News is definitely just one part of it.
Oh, they just turned my stomach.
when we talk about freedom fighters in Iraq trying to repel invaders to their country as insurgents, that's a lie. It's a wretched lie, and it's the lie that everyone repeats. We invaded their country. We're stealing their oil, okay? And the things that we've done to that country are war crimes, and they're horrible, and they're wretched. And that's not that's not an opinion. That's an objective observation.
Well, and put yourself in the Iraqis' position. Just imagine that you woke up one day, and Canadian troops were marching down the street, and they had these big rocket launchers and tanks, and they had planes overhead with bombs, and they were coming in your house and grabbing you and dragging you away and interrogating you and bombing your town into rubble, and you couldn't go outside, and there was no food and no water and no electricity. And they didn't, maybe Canadian is a bad one. Let's say it. We'll just say the French, okay? Because they could have to be someone who didn't speak your language. And they didn't speak English, and you couldn't understand a word they were saying. And they came up at you and started jabbering in French at you, and you were like, huh? What? And when you didn't understand, they just shot you. I mean, wouldn't you be a little annoyed? Wouldn't you join the insurgency to repel these people? Of course you would. I have total sympathy for the Iraqi people. They did not ask for this. Probably, you know, 1 in 1,000 people, you know, sympathize with Saddam. The rest of them are innocent people just trying to live their lives, and we're totally destroying them and their country. And I blame them a bit for being insurgents. And it's just ridiculous.
Now watch, you'll get a support our troops call.
Well, which is not to say, of course, that I support the troops. Yes, I want them to come home.
I want to point out a couple of different articles folks might... Common Dreams right now is a flush with really good articles, I have to say. One of them, this is on their wire from yesterday. You can also find it in The Guardian UK, which is just an amazingly good paper. It's called The Comedy of Terror, and it's by Terry Jones. I won't take the time to actually read it, but let's just say Terry Jones of Monty Python fame.
That Terry Jones.
Is actually, he's a brilliant political writer, and quite funny as well. He's giving his awards for the year. let's say Dick Cheney gets the Goblet of Fire Award. Tony Blair gets the, really in poor taste, I must say, the Gary Glitter Cup for Self-Restraint. and the Apocalypse Now Award goes to, of course, your friend of mine, George W. Bush. So go ahead, check that out. It's amusing and horrifying all at the same time.
Sort of like George Bush himself.
Also, the Wednesday postings of the Common Dreams News Center Wire reprinted an article from the New York Observer. It is entitled "Police State Powers Are Our Biggest Threat." It starts with the line, "What has happened to this country?" Goes on to explain the extremely conservative warrant system, that is FISA, the court that specifically deals with warrants, and how extremely permissive they are when they are asked for warrants, as Melody was indicating earlier, and in fact how even that even getting that warrant is just not
so
okay with this administration. So, again, we really have to be vigilant. We have to be vigilant, and we have to speak up when any administration tramples civil liberties. We have to speak up, or we lose our civil liberties. All right, let's go ahead and talk to our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
All right.
I was interested in that caller that was, supporting the wiretapping.
Uh-huh.
And your response as well. It reminded me of what I fear at our Christmas dinner and my family, that somebody was written about it. But you know what would be helpful for me is I reacted the same way. I just bristled because it's so scary to me. But it would really help me if you would ask these people that call now and then, I'd like to know where they're getting their specific information, because he had a line in there like he had heard this directly from somebody. I don't know if it's Rush Limbaugh. That would really help me to get a perspective of where this is coming from.
That's a great point.
And maybe to find out what his fears are.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what I go through when I hear these comments, you know, family comments or whatever. I try to think, now, where is this coming from? What are they really afraid of? So
I think those are important things to understand. Really important things. So I thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yeah, could I bring up one other thing that has to do with wiretapping? It's been on my mind for a while. If the stuff that's going on right in front of our face that I don't think people are aware of. I'm a school teacher, and there's a program with ESD, Educational Service District, and this is Multnomah County, but I assume it's throughout the state. And it's this centralized gathering of not only grades and tests that our children are taking. It all goes into a centralized bank, but now they're having anecdotal summaries of behaviors, and secretaries and administrators are being trained on exactly how to put this in this centralized system.
Huh?
Now, this
is like actually making real your permanent record that was always so sort of tongue-in-cheek.
That's as disturbing to me as the teachers and principals urging parents to put their children on Ritalin when they're not doctors and not qualified to diagnose it, which happens sometimes.
Well, at least at my school, teachers are very leery of touching that. But what my main concern is down the road, you know, with the lack of respect for human rights, that the government could easily, the police could easily tap into these records.
Yeah.
And say, oh, look, he's been a troublemaker since the third grade.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's really serious. It used to be these things were kept in files and, you know, and then a teacher would just kind of get an idea.
Right.
But now it's way, way, way too scary.
That does disturb me because, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that they've done a lot of studies where they've actually taken the quote-unquote slow group of students, the lowest achieving group, and told the teacher that they are the high achieving group, and that it turns out at the end of the term that the children do really well. And so the expectations of the teacher or the person who's working with the kids really makes a huge difference in how they perform. And so that is super disturbing to me, that basically not only are you predestining a child based on some of their behavior to be sort of stuck in that role, but then later that this would be information would be available to authorities. That's very scary.
Well, the paradox in all this, or the irony, is we are under strict rules now that a teacher from 1 year can't share specific information to a teacher from another. So this information is not for teachers. This information is just centrally located.
Actually, I've just been reading about this. This is being pushed by Libby, Merck, Roche, and Pfizer, and their intention and the actual program being undertaken by the Bush administration now is to categorize all school children into these little boxes and then to prescribe drugs according to the way they are, and to mandate the drugs according to the way they are described.
This is unbelievable. So you, as a teacher, if you have a student who has special issues and, you know, you've helped the student work with them, you're not allowed to speak to that student's new teacher as they move on to the next grade?
This was an in-service that we had this year. Now, you may have other callers that will have interpreted that differently, but it was very weird to me. Now,
I'm a
specialist. I teach music, so because I teach all the kids, I have a little more freedom in that, and I can talk about what happened last year and this year because they're still my students.
Right.
But it's getting very weird out there. And then it brings up, and maybe you could do a show on this sometime, is the ethics of technology in terms of surveillance.
Absolutely. So, and that's a show coming up soon.
Oh, that's great. Well, anyway, have a good new year.
Same to you.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that's really disturbing information. I just can't talk about as if teachers didn't have a hard enough job already.
Man, oh man, alive. Let's go ahead, take another call. We got two callers on hold, 7 minutes left in the show. Call it six, actually. And good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning, and I'll try to be short. I've got a specific and a general. On the eco-terror thing, there's been lost the story of the arson fire at the Oak Ridge Ranger Station. which was evaluated as $9 million, I think, loss, which was the largest eco fire. This was not ELF. They did not take credit for it.
Right.
And it looks to be an inside job, right-wing.
In fact, if
Reichstag fire,
right,
it's just been lost in all of. It's just been forgotten.
What about the Detroit?
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was actually the fire that destroyed many of the records that environmentalists
all the records of
had
all
been,
of the timber sales.
Yeah, exactly. That the environmentalists had been really painstakingly, you know, researching.
It was the evidence for the government wrongdoing. Let me move right along.
Yeah, please. I'm sorry.
I just think at some point we all need to leapfrog over these worries about eavesdropping and keeping records starting in childhood. Those records can never be erased. That eavesdropping can never be undone. It's time to choose action and go into action and ignore all of these things they're thinking. And the only action there is to elect a Congress to abolish the CIA. And you do that by cutting the purse strings.
Just right.
Out of job. And just a complete radical thing like that. It's time for a rewrite of the government. This is not going to be something we can put band-aids on or fix the few problem people and it's all going to go back to normal. It's never going to go back to normal. The whole blackboard has to be erased and we write a new one.
And perhaps a bigger question there is, what was the back to normal in the first place? Because for so long the corruption has been happening. It's
back
just
to
really
normal is people having conversations like this.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And person to person and community and integration and all of us
right on.
Raising our children, keeping our families, growing our food, and no government, basically. Stop paying the taxes. We don't need the federal, and we don't need the state government. We could just be tribes of natives camped across the land, the world around. Two layers of government, local, village, and United Nations, and no government in between.
All right. Thank you very much for
radical
your call this morning.
Well, at the rate we're all going, we'll all be too poor to pay taxes for long.
I'm loving that vision, actually. I'm loving that vision. All right. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Well, hey. How are my favorite Wiccans? This is LJ.
Hey,
how you guys,
hello.
How have you guys been?
Doing all right.
Hanging
good,
in.
Good. How was Santa Claus?
Yeah, Santa Claus, I think, is delayed at
he
my
didn't
house.
He didn't make it to my house. I think he
stuck
had stopped
chimney
at the bar first and had a few too many.
Well, I got to tell you, I was rather disappointed that, like, again, this year, I did not get the pony. So.
Really?
I got a pony last year.
And I didn't get world peace either.
It's four inches. He probably gave your pony to Saddam Hussein by mistake.
My pony is 4 inches high, but it neighs.
Yeah, really? Okay, here's the deal. I was listening to James this morning. I really respect that man, although he's kind of pretty far to the right for me. But my problem with some of the things that James has to say is that the thing that makes the United States of America, according to our government, that makes us the greatest country in the world, right, is that we're a cut above the rest of the countries in protecting our rights and our freedoms. Yet, according to the Bill of Rights, which I have sitting right in front of me, clearly our First Amendment Bill of Rights is being stepped on.
Oh, yes.
As is our Fourth Amendment Bill of Rights being stepped on.
I do believe that they're trying to just to take scissors and cut the Fourth Amendment right out of the Constitution.
Well, yes.
A little bottle of white out, mm-hmm, renumber things. No one will remember.
And I believe Mr. Bush did stress in one of his speeches that the reason that the terrorist Al-Qaeda organization attacked us in the first place is because they're jealous of our freedoms.
Well, so maybe if he takes all of our freedoms away, they won't be jealous anymore,
well,
and that's what's going
to
keep us safe?
To that.
See, there you go.
All of a sudden, I understand. LJ, thank you.
Okay.
Now
if
I get
we don't
it
have any more freedoms to protect you guys, everything will be just hunky-dory.
Isn't that called cutting off your nose to spite your face?
That's right.
Oh,
I thought so.
LJ, okay, thank you so much for your call.
Okay, I just got to tell you one more thing.
Okay.
All right.
Really
I am, I, real quick, I am talking to you from a rotary dial phone that doesn't understand electronics. So, thank goodness.
Yay.
There you go.
Have a happy new year.
Happy new year.
And I hope everybody has a great new year. We have a lot of work to do, but we can do it.
And
know?
I say ritual where you can. You know, as we send out the old in this secular of New Year celebrations, you know, let us turn the page of the Gregorian calendar onto hope, on peace, working together, and solidarity like our lives depend on it.
Because they do.
Hasta la victoria siempre.
And everyone, keep on being positively revolting all through the year.
And it's 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Radio has a one-year full-time position available for a training systems developer. This person will develop an in-house training system for ongoing.